This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome to All Things Armenian. This is Professor Barlo Demirgadich, and I'm your host. And today is another beautiful day here in Fresno with a bright, sunny day. My guest today is Dr. Oanes Kilicdaa. Dr. Kilicdaa has just been named as the 17th Kazan Visiting Professor in Armenian Studies at Fresno State, and he'll be teaching a course at Fresno State in the fall semester. So I'd like to welcome you to the program, Oanes.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to this program and also having me as the Kazan visiting professor this term. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's great. I want to ask you a little bit about your background. You were born and raised in Istanbul in the now small Armenian community there. Tell us a little bit about the Armenian community, first of all, in your estimation, the size of it, what's happening with it a little bit, and then something about your own background, where you went to school and about your education.
Yeah, as you say, I was born and raised as a member of Istanbul Armenian community. And until my college or undergraduate education, I followed Armenian community schools. And I'm a graduate of Getronagan High School, Getronagan Varisharan, in Istanbul. I'm sure most of our listeners would know it. And after high school, I, strange enough, let's say, first I entered dentistry faculty, but later I just became aware that my interest and my concern are not that kind of occupations or hard sciences, let's say. So I directed to myself social sciences and humanities. But before that, as for your question pertaining to Armenian community, it's Istanbul Armenian community or Turkish Armenian community, because when we say Turkish Armenian community, I don't know, maybe 99% of them are living in Istanbul. So Turkish Armenian community is almost equal to Istanbul Armenian community. Of course, I'm talking about quote-unquote official Armenians, because you know, on the other side, there is another phenomenon called Islamized Armenians, who today live as Muslims, at least nominal Muslims, but of course, living, guessing their number, it is also difficult to tell the number of official Armenians, quote-unquote, again, official Armenians. But according to many predictions, many guests, it equals to between 50 and 60,000 people. And indeed, it's a very, very small community, especially considering the whole population of Turkey. It's less than 1,000, one per thousand, I'd say. But on the other end, compared to its quantity, numerical, let's say, quantity, it's a quite vivid and wide community, of course, with many problems. I don't know, maybe in coming minutes. We can go into the details of these problems and situation. And also I can say that this community, this small community, has produced many names, both in sciences, in medicine, in other sciences, in engineering, as well as in other occupations, like lawyers, I don't know, teachers, etc. So compared to its size, I'm trying to say that it's quite plentiful, it's quite productive in that sense. There are many Armenians in Turkish spheres, in Turkish public spheres, talking, writing, and producing in their fields.
And when you, I can say this. Yeah, you attended, you said the Getronagan, the central high school Istanbul, and actually I was able to visit there a few years ago, and they were celebrating their 125th anniversary, so it's actually one of the oldest, not the oldest high school.
Yeah, as you know, it was founded by Nerses Varjavetyan, Patriarch Nerses Varjavetyan, and you know, it's a very old, and it's a school that has its own tradition, and its graduate, its alumni today is dispersed to the different corners of the world. And you know, especially within Armenian community, but also among non-Armenians, at least some non-Armenians, it's a very respectful and respected institution of education. So I can easily say that I'm a proud alumni of Getronagan High School.
And would you say that the overwhelming majority of the students were Armenian, and or are there other people coming into the school now too?
According to Turkish law, the other option or accepting non-Armenians into Armenian community is not possible. So there is no other way, in other words, as an answer to your question. Everybody attending to any Armenian school in Turkey has to be an Armenian. And of course, the definition of Armenianness until recently was bounded to the identity of father. In other words, if only your father is Armenian, you are accepted as an Armenian. But I don't know, a few years ago, Turkish civil law, as a general amendment, Turkish civil law was changed. And after that amendment, either your father or your mother would suffice to define you as an Armenian. So again, today, if your father or mother is Armenian, you can attend these schools. If none of them is Armenian, then officially, legally, there is no way for you to go to attend these Armenian schools. So your answer is that, yes, every student in Armenian community schools is an Armenian officially.
And the curriculum then is in Armenian, basically in Armenian, of course, with Turkish. Can you tell us a little bit about how that?
You know, again, of course, it differs through history, let's say, through Republican history. If I'm to give a general view, according to regulations, these schools, I mean, Armenian community schools, may have their own courses of Armenian language, and their own courses of religion, etc. But some certain courses like history, geography, sociology, social science and humanities, let's say, have to be given by teachers who are sent by the government. In other words, you cannot employ on your wish anyone to teach history, again, geography, I don't know, sociology, because you know what? These courses might be quote unquote dangerous. You cannot allow, I mean, and when I say you, I mean the government or the state, according to their own way of thinking, they cannot allow anyone coming to the Armenian schools and talking about history, talking about society, talking about geography, etc. So this kind of certain courses then, according to, again, Turkish law, have to be given, have to be taught by public teachers, by or teachers sent by the government. Other courses, like, I don't know, mathematics, physics, of course, besides Armenian language and religion, they have quote unquote that freedom. But you know, time to time, sometimes government put some pressure on these courses. I mean, as for example, to lessen, to decrease the hours of these courses or the sessions of these courses. But on the paper, let's say, these schools are free to give their own Armenian courses of Armenian language. But again, as I say, they are not completely free in their curriculum. They have to follow, as all other public schools, they have to follow the public curriculum. But, you know, the trick, let's say, is here is that, again, according to law, these Armenian community schools are not defined as public schools, but private schools, as if they are working for profit. But of course, the reality is dramatically different. Leaving aside for working for profit, these schools, Armenian community schools, usually have annual budget deficits, and they try to compensate these deficits through donations, basically. But of course, again, it's a long story, but it is a chronic problem. I mean, the budget deficit of Armenian schools is a chronic problem of the Armenian community. Recently, government has started to financially contribute to the budget of these schools. But, you know, again, it's not stable, it's not constant. Once they give, once they do not, etc. So this status inconsistency, I mean, being private schools on the paper, but working as public schools in reality, then is a problem for Armenian schools in Istanbul.
I have an interesting question then, because you mentioned that the social sciences are taught by Turkish faculty or teachers that are brought in to teach that topic. My question would be, how do they teach about Armenians in Turkey? And of course, the extension would be the genocide. But even apart from the genocide, how do they see and teach about Armenians as being a part of Turkey, both modern and in history?
Basically, they do not teach. They do not teach about Armenians. As a continuation of general attitudes, I mean, official attitude, at least until recently, the word Armenian or the existence of Armenians has been erased from textbooks. And whenever the term Armenian is mentioned, it is mentioned related to terrorism and assassinations of Turkish diplomats, etc. So when you read a Turkish textbooks, I mean, honestly speaking, I do not check recently any Turkish textbook, but I don't think that there would be any substantial difference. So when you check a historical, for example, Turkish textbook, you see nothing about Armenians and Armenian existence in today's Turkey or in Anatolia, or let's say, of course, nobody would use the term Western Armenia, but even in Anatolia, let's say, or in today's Turkey, in textbooks, in official courses, Armenians are hardly mentioned. And as I say, when they are mentioned, they are mentioned as traitors, as terrorists, as you know. So let me, if we have time, let me relay one of my anecdotes. When I was in Getronagan High School, there is a course. It's called in Turkish Inkılap Tarihi. When we translate it, we can say that the history of revolution. And by revolution, they mean the founding of Turkish Republic and all these period between, let's say, 1920 till 1922. And there was, of course, we had a textbook and there was a reading piece in it describing the atrocities Armenians realized, Armenians did on Muslims in Kars or Erzurum, something like that. And, you know, it was very, let's say, graphic and disgusting piece because it defines how Armenians nailed the lungs of people into the wall, etc., etc. This kind of graphic descriptions. So our teacher, I'm Turkish teacher because, as I say, the teachers of these courses were sent by the government. So when we reached that piece, for example, at least our teacher made us skip that reading piece. But, you know, imagine that all other schools, all other students were reading this piece. So it would be very, of course, disturbing for us, for Armenian, as Armenian kids, to read such kind of pieces in which the, in which it is described how Armenians killed and massacred people. So again, the answer of your question is that basically Armenians or the history of Armenians has not been taught at schools at all.
And would you be able then to get it in another form at the school, or does it have to come from the family? Where would your knowledge of Armenian history come from?
No, it would be especially depending on the political circumstances, political conjecture. What you say might be very risky for the school. I mean, to organize such informal courses or let's say secret courses. So there was no such course about Armenian history, let's say official or unofficial. So basically, the information about Armenian history does not come from anywhere. I mean, of course, every family, depending on their own level of information, may teach their kids, but you know, you shouldn't expect much in this issue from families. After a while, after adolescence, let's say, every individual may start to study and research by himself or herself. So again, there is no systematic education about Armenian history in Istanbul Armenian community.
But I think recently, due to political changes in Turkey, probably since Erdogan came to power, there's actually been an interesting phenomenon that books about the genocide have been published in Turkish. So how do you explain that?
I mean, indeed, it started before Erdogan came to power, or this ruling party, AKP, let's say, came to power. Indeed, it started toward the end of 1990s. It has many different reasons related to Turkey, related to international developments, like the end of Cold War, etc. But let me not go into that details. But consequently, let's say, beginning from late 1990s, an atmosphere in Turkey started to rise in which it became easier, relatively easier to talk about Armenian history, Armenian genocide, etc. As a matter of fact, the emergence of Agos newspaper or the emergence of Aras Publishing House contributed much to this environment because they published articles about Armenian history, Armenian genocide, etc., and in books, of course. So then we can say that from late 1990s, a relative liberalization in these issues has started. And as you know, in 2005, for example, although there were many difficulties and many debates, etc., many fights about this, but you know, in 2005, for the first time in Turkish Republican history, a conference was organized in Istanbul about the Ottoman Armenians, their existence and their fate, their ultimate fate, etc. So there was a relative liberalization, but for last, I don't know, 5-6 years, everything started to go back, let's say. This relative liberalization has ended. And moreover, and furthermore, the general atmosphere in Turkey, political atmosphere in Turkey, make it again very risky and dangerous to talk about Armenian genocide and let's say other quote unquote dangerous issues. So again, there is a volatility, if you like, from late 1990s to this end. First, we witnessed a relative betterment, a relative progress, but nowadays, again, for some years, let's say, we just return back to the old habits of Turkish state and all these old repressive and authoritarian habits of Turkish state and society. So it's a pity, let's say.
My guest today is Dr. Ohanes Kılıçdağ. He is the Kazan Visiting Professor in Armenian Studies at Fresno State. We're going to take a brief pause with All Things Armenian and come back in just a moment.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm Professor Barlo Demirgadichian, your host, and today our guest is Dr. Ohannes Kilicdaa. Welcome back, Ohannes.
Thank you.
Well, we were talking about your education, and I wanted to talk now about your interest in Armenian studies and how you came about actually pursuing Armenian studies and deciding on writing actually a dissertation. So you mentioned earlier that you had started in dental school, but what turned you towards social studies history and in particular Armenian history?
You know, I mean, the short answer to this question is my, let's say, kind of rebellion and anger against injustice, okay? Because as I described the situation in Turkey, the term Armenian has been used with a very negative connotation and as an insult, if you like. So most of the people in the face of this situation, very understandably, prefer to remain silent as a weaker community, you know. But personally, the result of this situation on me is a kind of objection, is a kind of, I don't know, maybe I can use this word as I say, rebellion against this injustice. And as a matter of fact, if you are an Armenian in Turkey, you do not have a chance to be or to cover or to ignore your Armenian identity unless you accept full assimilation, okay? Because, as I say, although Armenian community is a very small, Armenians remained as a small community in Turkey, the term Armenian is a very frequent in political discourse and political debates, as an if you like, as a ghost, okay? Because, as I say, in reality, Armenians in Turkey do not have such a concrete weight in politics, okay? But when you follow this Turkish political discourses, Turkish political sphere, you may across the term Armenian very frequently. And as I say, in a very negative connotation and in a very negative framework. So again, indeed, when after dentistry school, I entered sociology department in one of the, let's say, best universities of Turkey, which is Boğaziçi in Turkish, Bosphorus University in English. Later on, I added political science as a second major. So once you entered these spheres as an Armenian in Turkey, I may say that you have no other chance than studying or being interested in Armenian issues, okay? Inevitably, people around you see you as an Armenian, first and foremost. And they expect from you an explanation, okay? For example, one of the frequent questions, every Armenian attending these such kind of institutions face is the question where they came from, okay? But you know, so you have to explain. As an Armenian, you have to know this historical background, etc., etc. But of course, as I say, I cannot say that I pursued Armenian studies or history just because of this. Of course, as I say, I had my own motivations. I had my own psychological and intellectual motivations. And as I say, basically it was the rejection or objection of this injustice and also an motive to articulate your identity, your existence. And besides, of course, there were some intellectual puzzles that made me being interested in these kind of issues. For example, I just wondered how can a people be destroyed, be annihilated, almost to the last individual, but continue to be still as a ghost community to the target of this kind of hatred, continuing and persistent hatred. Still, until this day, this kind of questions is very interesting and puzzling for me. Again, a motivation to understand or to reflect on such kind of questions also drove me to study Armenian history and Armenian quote-unquote question. And of course, it is not possible just to study exclusively, let's say, study Armenian issues or Armenian problems, whatever. You should do it in conjunction with Ottoman Turkish history. So consequently, I am always also interested in the, especially late Ottoman history and Turkish Republican history, without which, of course, the trajectory of Armenians cannot be understood.
And you were mentioning about your own inner feelings about being an Armenian in the sense of use the term rebellion or but did your peers also share these ideas? So when you talk to your friends, Armenian friends in school, what was their reaction to things as the situation as it was in Turkey? Or did some of them just say, well, we don't want to talk about it?
As I say, until again 2000s, as an answer to your question, until 2000s, Armenian families in Turkey, in Istanbul, let's say, did not prefer that their kids would study social sciences and humanities, these areas, because it may have brought about problems for their kids. It might be risky and dangerous for their kids. So usually Armenian families then directed their kids to areas, as I say, medicine, engineering, such kind of quote-unquote unrisky or soft areas, soft domains. But after or by 2000s, more Armenian youth or started to be interested in this kind of issues, social sciences and humanities. And, it is also related to the relative liberalization I just mentioned minutes before. So it was also a part of that liberalization that some more Armenians started to be interested in history, in politics, in humanities, etc. Again, in other words, it's a matter of political situation. It's a matter of political atmosphere, okay? If it is tense, then people try to avoid it, okay? Try to avoid this kind of dangerous issues and discussions. If political environment gets more relaxed, let's say, more liberal, they started to talk about all these kind of issues, to publish articles, books about it. So it differs from time to time. So for example, in 1980s, it was almost unimaginable for Armenians to articulate themselves in public sphere. In 1970s, or I can add this, 1970s, 80s, I'm sure you may guess why, because of all these Asal assassinations, emergence of Kurdish problem, emergence of PKK, etc., etc. So those decades, for example, it was, again, almost unimaginable for Armenians to emerge and articulate themselves, their point of view. Toward the end of 1990s, again, it got more liberal, but again, today it returned to almost 19, 1980s, etc. So again, the answer is to your question is it depends on the political conjuncture. But usually, generally speaking, of course, it's not easy. It's not easy for Armenians in Turkey to rise and defend their rights, their point or articulate their point of view.
Well, it's even true in the United States. I mean, if you look at the Armenian community in the United States, even though it was substantial and even though it was the United States, I would say it wasn't until the civil rights movement of the 1960s that any ethnic groups were going to publicly in the sphere say, I'm Armenian or I'm proud to be Armenian. So it took that long and even much longer than that. And even during the period you mentioned in the 70s and 80s of political violence, that had repercussions on the Armenian community. Oh, you're Armenian. Sure. You know what's happening. Sure. You know, so it is very much reflective of the larger political situation in the countries where Armenians live. And each area in the diaspora is different as well. As we look at Soviet Armenia, we look at Armenians in Iran, in Europe. It's a big question, a very interesting question as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very also complicated question to let's say, discuss the differences between diaspora communities. As you say, from country to country, the situation, the psychology, the social conditions, political conditions of each Armenian community differs very much from country to country. But as a rough, let's say, analysis, I think that Turkish Armenians or Armenians in Turkey, I think, constitute a third way of being Armenian. Besides being diaspora and besides living in Armenia, I think the situation of Turkish Armenians does not fit any of these. Of course, still, and when we say diaspora, of course, we are talking about many different heterogeneous communities, of course. But for a while, if you forget about the internal differences within diaspora, I can say that being in diaspora, being in Armenia, and being in Turkey or living in Turkey, these are roughly, of course, three phases or three different situations of being Armenian today in the world, I think. So, in other words, I think the situation of Turkish Armenians and their history should be discussed as a third category of being Armenian.
And that was kind of the beginnings of what your dissertation is about, right? So tell us a little bit about your dissertation and where that led you to this concept of the third way. So tell us a little bit about the dissertation.
My dissertation is specifically interested in the second constitutional period of Ottoman Empire. I mean, to cut the long story short, you know, after 30 something years of Hamidian despotism in 1908, the constitution, elections and parliament were restored by Hamid because he couldn't resist anymore the pressure coming from soldiers, etc. But leaving all these details aside, these parliamentarian, let's say, institutions and constitution were restored in 1908. And, you know, for everyone, but especially for Armenian community, it was a hope for a new start, for a fresh start. And after these three decades of blood, despotism, agony, etc., they expected a more peaceful, more democratic society and state. So in this environment, in this atmosphere, as everyone else, Armenians, Ottoman Armenians also started to produce their own projections, their own projects about the future of the Ottoman Empire. So it was a very critical moment, okay, to understand the ideas and expectations of Armenian communities. So I prefer to look at that moment both from the perspective of Armenian community and from the perspective of, let's say, Ottoman state as much as possible, but my dissertation is rather focused on the Armenian perspective. So within this perspective, I looked at the internal debates, internal fragments of Ottoman Armenians at that moment, as well as their expectations from the state, from the ruling party. And I also allocate a specific chapter to the military service of, let's say, Armenians, but of course it was not peculiar to Armenians, but to all, let's say, non-Muslims, Christians and Jews, because until 1909, until the revolution, let's say, these communities had been exempted from military service. Again, it's a very detailed issue. Hopefully in one of my public lectures, I will explain all this in more detail. But let me say for now is that military service is an important indicator to understand how a state perceives their citizens, how a state defines their subjects, etc. And as well as to understand the attitude of subjects, attitude of citizen toward that state, okay? So again, it was very instructive, informative to look at the debates about military service, of course, among Armenians especially, and to observe to what extent especially Armenian politicians, or Ottoman Armenian politicians, were eager about this military service, being soldiers in Ottoman army, etc. So it was very interesting for me to observe these kind of things. So my dissertation, shortly speaking, is interested in all these kind of issues in the context of second constitutional period, roughly speaking between 1908. Of course, it is debatable when this period ended, and the second constitutional period ended in 1913, for example, when the ruling or the one, let's say CUP, Committee of Union and Progress, realized a coup. One may say that after that coup, second constitutional period officially ended. But someone might say that no, it was ended when the First World War erupted in 1914. So, but again, leaving all this kind of debates aside for now, I can say that I'm interested in the period between 1908 and 1914, let's say, in my dissertation.
And you said the debate among the Armenians, where was that expressed, in what sphere? You're not just talking about the parliament, but within Armenian newspapers, probably. And were there even meetings where people were discussing these things?
Yeah, my source is largely Armenian press of the time, as well as minutes of the parliament, because, as I say, once the elections and parliament were restored, of course, some Armenians were elected as deputies and took their part in the Ottoman parliament and made many speeches there. So you can follow the minutes and their speeches. Beside this, my main source, but was the Armenian press of the time. And when I say Armenian press, I do not mean only the press in Constantinople, but more in provinces. I don't know, in Erzurum, in Sivas, in Tokat, in Konya, in Trabzon. You know, after revolution 1908, a general increase and dramatic increase happened in the press, not only in Armenian press, but also in Ottoman press. I mean, the number of periodicals skyrocketed in a very short time. So Armenian press was no exception to this. So the number of Armenian newspapers and periodicals increased again dramatically once freedom, let's say, was reestablished. So as a result, many different Armenian periodicals were published in various cities of Anatolia, okay, in both in the west and in the east, from, as I say, Izmir, Izmirnia to Erzurum, from Sivas to Izmit, etc. So I used a bunch of newspapers, a bunch of periodicals published in these cities for my research as my primary material in my dissertation. So I based my arguments, in other words, to minutes of the parliament, to this Armenian press, as well as other books and brochures, pamphlets published by Armenian intellectuals or published by Armenian political parties, which are, of course, quite plentiful to understand the atmosphere of the time, to understand the mentality of the time.
My guest today is Dr. Oanes Kılıçdağ. We're on All Things Armenian today. We're going to take a quick break and then come back again and conclude our discussion.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlo Dermogradichin. My guest today is Dr. Oanes Kılıçdağ. He's appointed as the 17th Kazan Visiting Professor in Armenian Studies at Fresno State. Thank you for joining me today on All Things Armenian.
Sure, my pleasure, my honor.
You've been working for almost the last 10 years with Agos newspaper, and I'd like to hear a little bit about Agos newspaper from your perspective as someone who has contributed, and tell me how you got involved with Agos and why you're still working with it in 10 years later. What's its significance for you?
As I say before, August with Aras Publishing played a very important role in publicizing the Armenian identity, or republicizing, or reminding Armenian identity to Turkish public opinion. In other words, Agos emerged and still is an important voice for Armenian community. And you know, not only for Armenian community, as an institution, it is also a defender of human rights, minority rights, not only of Armenians, but any kind of oppressed groups, okay? So not only for Armenians, but I think for Turkish, let's say, political culture, Agos is an important medium, for this kind of oppressed and marginalized people to articulate themselves. It's a platform, in other words. Actually, I have been a columnist for almost, let's say, 9 years for Agos. In 2011, Robert Koptaş was the general director of the newspaper, and he proposed me if I was willing to write a column there. I happily accepted, and from that day on, it was one of my, let's say, enjoyable occupations or enjoyable works that I'm writing a column there. Actually, I have never worked in the kitchen, let's say, if you like, in the kitchen of Agos newspaper. I'm just sending my writings, my articles. But as I say, still, especially for Armenian community, but not only for Armenian community, Agos still functions as a very important medium, very important platform to defend the rights, human rights of Armenians as well as other groups.
And what do your columns focus on? Are you mostly interested in contemporary Armenian issues, or do you just give us a scope of what you like to cover?
I mean, it differs. It differs from week to week. Sometimes I relay my own works, I mean, historical works. So I'm talking about history, but some weeks I focus on just hot issues, quote unquote, hot issues in Turkey. So again, in that sense, the scope of my column is quite large. I cannot say that I exclusively focus on the past or past issues history. Again, inevitably, I'm a close follower of Turkish politics. So week to week, because, you know, Agos is a weekly newspaper, for those who does not know this, it's a weekly newspaper. So from week to week, I may also focus on issues, hard issues in Turkish political debates. And these issues might be related to Armenians or not.
And in Turkey today, are newspapers such as Agos under any type of pressure, censorship? How is that reflected?
You know, indeed, nowadays, censorship and pressure in Turkey is a routine, if I may say. I mean, pressure from government on journalists, newspapers, etc., is a routine. But, of course, the reasons might be discussed, but as far as I see, the pressure on Agos is not so much. Maybe they do not see Agos as an important, let's say, or an influential medium, so they do not pressure much. Or another possible answer is that, you know, such a pressure on Agos would produce an international reaction. Of course, I'm not sure whether they care anymore about international reaction, but I think maybe they think that putting such kind of pressure on Agos is not worth taking such kind of risks because, you know, Agos is a small newspaper. And as I say, although it's a medium for oppressed people, its influence is restricted, limited. So maybe they think that putting pressure on Agos wouldn't be a rational, if you like, a reasonable act for themselves. By the way, leaving aside the pressure coming from government, time to time, Agos newspaper and Granting Foundation, which was established after the assassination, Agos newspaper and Granting Foundation, time to time, received threats from quote-unquote citizens, civilians. But of course, it's very difficult to say whether this kind of threats is a part of organized effort or because of just this anti-Armenian environment in Turkey. But as a reality, this kind of threats from, as I say, civilians, from ordinary people, time to time, reach Agos and Granting Foundation.
Well, I'm going to change the topic here in the last few minutes. You've also been very interested in translation and have translated a lot of the work of a Fresno native, William Saroyan, of course, a worldwide name. So tell us a little bit about that. Tell us a little bit about some of the things you've translated, but really how you got into that translation.
You know, I mentioned Aras Publishing House, again, established in the second half of 1990s. And especially founders were my friends, still are my friends. So they proposed me to translate William Saroyan into Turkish. And as a part of that effort, I mean, they translated many books, many works of Saroyan. As a part of that effort, I read, I mean, I don't know, maybe 70, 80, maybe 100 stories by Saroyan, and made a selection and later translated that stories, basically, into Turkish. It was a very enjoyable and informative experience for me. I know, I mean, it's completely unnecessary to repeat how big Saroyan is, how a big author he is. So I learned very much from him, especially about the early experiences of Armenians in the United States, especially his early stories, as you know, are about these experiences of Armenians, their experience of being alien in a different country, trying to be entrenched there. So especially for me, it's important. I mean, his early stories are really important to understand these experiences. And of course, as I said, he's I think, one of the important authors, writers of the 20th century, not only in the United States, but I think in the world. So again, it was my luck, if you like, my luck to receive such a proposal from Aras Publishing House and from using that opportunity to go into the depth of William Saroyan and his works. It's a pity. I was very willing to be physically in Fresno and see his places. But unfortunately, this COVID thing, let's say, besides many other things, ruined also my dreams about walking on the streets of
Indonesia. You will have that. You will have that opportunity in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Let's see.
My guest today has been Dr. Ohanes Kılıçdağ. He's the 17th annual Kazan Visiting Professor. He'll be teaching a course at Fresno State in the fall semester, which begins in August, and will also be giving three public lectures. And I think we'll be having him back again on All Things Armenian once he's had a chance to start his teaching and to have some of his lectures. So thank you very much for joining us, Ohanes.
Sure. Thank you for inviting me again for both this program and Fresno. At least online.
And this is Professor Barlow Demirgadichyan for All Things Armenian. And thank you for joining us today. And we'll see you next week for another episode of All Things Armenian.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.